Hello, everyone. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. Thank you for showing up. I really appreciate you being here. I'm recording this at an odd time than usual. Typically, I like to work. Is this work? I like to do my work in the morning, typically. I burn hottest when I wake up in the morning, and at that point, I'm just raring to go, and I do tend to burn and get rather tired towards the latter half of the day. So it's like 8:30 right now, and I should be going to bed in about an hour, and I don't know. I felt compelled to sit here and try to talk to you guys, and I don't even know what I'm going to talk about. So let's get into it. I've been thinking a lot about separation in particular. Now, I know I probably have a whole episode on this, but maybe this will just be a review or a return to this topic or idea. Yet, I feel that not all societies are built the same. But my society, which is America, has a particular pathos in the way that it expresses itself and the way that it conditions its participants. So, in America, the American dream is completely about the individual. The individual comes first. Greed comes first. Capitalism is built upon the idea that a single person, through manipulation of tools or, you know, capital, whether it be some sort of base mineral and turning it into something, or an animal and turning it into a hamburger. But for this, it's really key to see how the individual gains potency through his or her or its ability to choose and to do. And when we're choosing, you know, our product placement, and we're choosing business, you know, I'm not saying that that's necessarily a bad thing. I'm not even saying that capitalism is a bad thing, even though I've expressed myself as a firm anti-capitalist for a long time. I don't think any of these ideas are necessarily bad in themselves. However, within the hyper-capitalistic model that my country is, I was conditioned from youth and told that I needed to find my skill and find my way to succeed, you know. And when I was growing up, this was done purely through school. And school still is the primary way that most professional workers, like, I don't know. But I think we're shifting away from that a lot in this new future that is the 2020s, globally even, where people have much more capacity to use their image and influence and then have a huge effect just because they have a camera. Yet again, not necessarily a bad thing. But when the individual is given all this power over their path, you know, this is what I was told I should aim for. I should want that. What is that? I should want to work. You know, and I'm not saying I'm lazy, but when I was growing up, I was always very good in school. And I know this is kind of a tangent. I didn't really explain myself just there. But when I was growing up, I was always very good at school. I was had the natural ability to do what they wanted me to do in that institution. I was always very fond of words, and I picked up words very early. And when the schema is in words, it made it much more easier to take part in. Yet, and I just realized this recently while talking with my father, yet I was primarily doing it for my dad, right? I didn't have a high self-value or self-worth, but I wasn't exactly particularly aware or sad about it in my youth. Yet, I did so well because I wanted to make my dad happy, you know? And I still work that way now in my career of cooking. I work the hardest when I have a strong partner that I care about, you know? Because even then, I wasn't working from that seat of I, that seat of self. And I'm not sure if I really had a strong idea of what my I was back then, you know? I knew what my dad wanted, and I did it well. And because of that, I was a motor mouth that reiterated facts back out, because the way that I had succeeded so far was impressing people with bits of knowledge that I had gathered. Yet, when I grew up and I started to get to like 16, 17, towards the end of high school, I was disillusioned because I realized, maybe not on the surface, but subconsciously, that I couldn't live my life for my dad, you know, or any one person, per se. At least that's part of growing up as a child, is you can't live for your parents. Young children always want to make their parents happy, but it seems that adolescence is this time period where we shirk our parents' duties and virtues, and opposite day almost seems to be an effect more than anything else. So I still got through school, but my freshman year of high school, I think I skipped like 280 days or 280 classes, not days, because that would have been more than the school year or something, but 280 classes, which there's 7 periods a day. So it was a significant amount of time that I wasn't there. And my father and I, and he was fucking pissed, were called into the office to talk to the dean. And that's when I heard the big scary words, you know, truancy court and charges and responsibility and those old heartstrings of caring about my father was flipped, and I noticed that I could get him in trouble through my actions, and that sickened me. So when I realized that there was big consequences for what I was doing, but yet again, I wasn't making decisions from that sense of I and self. I was making the decisions from the vague societal structure called law that was around me, and from fear of law, you know, which is the exact same issue I had with marijuana growing up, is my fear of the law of marijuana. You know, as soon as I could smoke freely as an adult, I felt it was the best smoke I ever smoked. You know, I was such a fearful little child pothead. Yeah. So once fear was instilled, I did no longer skip any more classes. You know, and it was crazy. My high school career was madness. I took so much acid in high school, and I don't particularly like acid now as an adult, lysergic acid diethyl amide. Very legal. I have no idea who even does anything like that. but yeah, I mean, sophomore and junior year of high school, I would say at least one day out of every week I was on acid in school, or like frying from the night before, or some other cocktail of pills and bullshit. Yeah. But I graduated high school with like a 3.8 GPA. And a lot of that's because my freshman year, my grades were weighted, but I'm not going to go into that. Anyways, my point is that I think part of what makes me weird and made life a challenge too was that I was approaching life antisocially, but pro-antisocially, if that makes any sense. You can be antisocial and like malignant, like a tumor, like a serial killer. And that's when you get to the point that you no longer consider other people's feelings. And a sociopath manipulates other people as pieces to get what they want, you know? So that's bad news. Bad news bear. But a pro-antisocial, which would be something like ODD, which is oppositional defiance disorder, which is a diagnosis that my son recently received, is a pro-antisocial disorder. And it comes from an issue with integration and an issue with acting and reacting within complex systems. But the person, even though they may not even be aware that they are not interacting smoothly, you know, they still care heavily about other people's opinions. You see, you can be very empathetic and extroverted and antisocial, is my point. And so I think that in a lot of ways, even though it was a challenge growing up, this gave me a unique position. And I think it's why my analysis is the way it is, because of the way that I see the world. And I don't think I'm unique. And I think every single human has little bits and pieces of any diagnosis and any treatment. You know, we're all dealing with our own shit, you know. But, which is what I'm talking about tonight. My separation came from a similar situation. When I'm looking at my son, I see so many cycles repeating and reiterations. And I'm not saying he's exactly like me, because there's a lot of ways that he's different. And I might have taught him this too, which I'm not completely convinced there's a biological origin for anything that I'm considering right now. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with me or anybody, really, you know, unless somebody is using and abusing other people to get what they want when it becomes malignant, which is something I do not do. When it comes to how we see our connections with other people, I think I was talking about this last episode as well. That's good. Hope you're following. I do think I'm growing out of my separation, which is cool too. I think I'm getting better at empathizing. My monologuing and my arrogance in conversation has often set up walls where I can't grow, because when you shut people down, they don't want to share. And as last week, as Mr. Mill stated, we should all aspire to vet all of our ideas, and especially the ones that are most important to us. Those are the ones that we should necessarily and strongly look for the best counterargument. You know, that's the way that we become wiser, is by testing our ideas and submitting them to the trial by fire. Yes. But it's difficult too, you know. I still consider myself asexual, and the biggest reason that I don't want to go into courting isn't necessarily because I have no desire, but it's because I'm very aware that I don't understand how I should be acting and reacting in that partnership with a person. And I worry that when we're listening to these other outside influences, like the law, such as the truancy court example from earlier, or the law when it comes to whether or not you want to partake in marijuana if your state does not allow it or if your country does not allow it. You know, this outside structure guides a lot of people, even people who are very social and have no issues. In fact, I feel that the more easier that it is to integrate within social systems, I feel like we can lose not uniqueness, because I don't think there is a unique spark at the center of all of us. If anything, it's the opposite of unique, because I think we share a very common spark, a very essence of oneness, of Brahma. But it can become cloudy. Maybe there needs to be a little bit of cloudiness. You know, but because I don't understand exactly how other people feel, and I don't completely understand how other people react to me until something becomes extreme and there's an argument and I'm giving an example that I've stepped too far, you know. But I've at least seen things very crisp from my perspective. It's been very uncommon that I'm confused about how I feel, you know, or at least, of course, we all have hidden underdwellings of things that, there's always the things that you don't know that you don't know. Yet, I didn't have a lot of, okay, so for instance, like we were talking about relationships, I involve myself heavily into a person because I attach to them too much. I throw myself wholly. You know, I fall in love in like a day or two, and I'm completely 100% devoted from that standpoint forward. Yet, I lose myself in it, and because I'm so hyper-focused on the other, I stuff all of what I was doing down. Not that it's always important what the I is doing. That's not the point here either. But we can lose ourselves into the social group mind, you know? When we're with a group of people, we think as one, because I think we're all connected as one. But I do think that the more people you have connected to each other, the dumber it gets. And if you have 100 really smart people in one room, they're going to make themselves dumber than just a group of 3 really good smart people who are working together. At least that's my opinion. So, because of my separation and my isolation, it's given me a very good analytic tool that I have been trying to break, ring and rung together over the past couple years. You see, I think that there is a balancing act. And in this life, it's important to find our way, whatever that way may be. And I don't think there's any doctrine for it. And you might have partners or you might not. And your way may look completely different than mine. Yet, in order to find that way, we have to have a little bit of holy selfishness that's at least geared towards some sort of actualized direction. Because if in this life, if we throw ourselves into the one, which the one for me, the soul, the para-atman, is adjacent to this, but all coexisting at the same time. You know, we may be an independent little being, but we might also have the universe within us reflected back at the universe. So, the group mind that I see in the social networks is also important. It's an ecosystem that we exist in. I think it's the most human part of our being and our biology is our community and our socialness and our culture. You know, the way that we transmit language and ideas through time. Yet, that thing, that humanness that has been evolving over centuries and thousands of years, I still think that that is very material and part of this world. I hope I'm not getting too spiritually wooshy for you if you're new to my show. I don't just talk about this shit, and this one's very unorganized, so please, please go look at other things too. But I don't think that the Übermensch, that the group mind and consensus of human society is where I need to lose myself, even though I have to work within that system because I'm human. And I can't run away from that system because I'm not convinced that running into the independent I and shunning the world and shunning the people and shunning existence, I don't see how that gets any closer to the one and to Atman. I don't. So, with things like antisocial disorder and ODD and all these diagnoses, is it biology? Maybe. I'm not sure if it's a chemical thing, which is why I've always shunned the use of medication, and I would refuse to medicate my son until I see him show any signs of depression or sadness. I will not make that choice for him either. But if it gets to the point that he might harm himself, then I will consider. But I found my way of being, even though I carried the ADHD diagnoses, and I medicated with marijuana, true, but yeah, to be fair, I've always been self-medicating. I just haven't been medicating with the drugs they want me to take, and I hate stimulants. But no, I don't think we need to adjust our chemistry, because the socialness is outside of the independent self. And social disorders that have to do with a difference of being. So let me explain that a little bit more. I think I've told this story before too, but it's a good one. You have a mother and a father sitting with a therapist and their strung out daughter who's 6 years old and cannot sit still in her chair. She is bouncing to and fro. She's doing somersaults. She would be floating if she had a little bit of fairy dust from the bell. So mother and father are obviously very distressed, and they don't know what to do, and they're asking for help. And they're pushing for medication or for something to do to fix their daughter. The therapist asks the parents to leave the room, and he has a door with a little window in it so they can peek inside. And they leave the little girl alone so that she thinks she is unobserved. And when they look inside, they see her twirling like a ballerina. The therapist looks over at them and says, "See? It's not school. She's just a ballerina. She's a dancer." I don't think we humans are cookie cutter and meant to go through industrial processes to educate us. I think that we need to be, what's the word? We need to be able to read. We need to be able to write. And we should have it built into family even to develop critical thinking skills. And that should start in the family, not even in school. If a child reaches school and has never had to critically think about any situation, they're already severely disadvantaged, you know? So, and yet again, I want to speak carefully here. In my situation, I can't help my son with reading and writing. And it's strange because I find myself incredibly drawn towards these things, and I would love to read with him and discuss these kind of things, but it's not his thing and he's not into it. He's not into words, and it's gorgeous because they were a trap for me. So, we need to be taught how to learn and how to want to be curious. And that is something that I think that schools are not doing, at least here in America. Nobody cares about fostering a child's curiosity in the American school system. It's industrial. It's just like building Model Ts. We have batch numbers. We ship them out at the same time, right? Does everybody belong to that? Why is there only one way of succeeding? I was lucky. And then when it all fell apart, when I turned 18 and I got out of high school and I started college, and I had no idea what I was doing. I still don't. And honestly, I wasted a lot of time in college, sorta. I learned how to read, and I learned how to focus on hard material and how to write about it and my father has never been good at talking about my things with me. So school gave me an echo chamber. And, you know, honestly, I was sitting in class and probably talking more than the teacher, you know? So I didn't need to be there either, but I still spent a lot of time, even in higher education, and I never got a degree. But I don't really even know what my point is tonight, but I want everybody to consider balance, however that may appear. And maybe all of my shit is just relative and could be a metaphor for something completely different in your life. I hope it relates. I do. I'm not just trying to talk about myself. I'm trying to help. I'm really trying to help. So I guess I haven't done that yet. I just got right into it this time. My purpose here on the Gingerbread Man, I want to inspire curiosity and I want to push love. I want you to be motivated to want to build some sort of spiritual system for yourself that does not have to be bound to gods or divinities or afterlives. It could be completely scientific. I find scientism to be a spiritualism, you know, and atheism is a spiritualism. It's a choice. So, but I want people to want to build their own schema. You know, I want them to be able to disengage from the group mind and then bring something back to make the group mind healthier. Because the group mind that's running our world right now, in my opinion, is very sick. And I don't talk about it enough, but I do think that things like love are viral, just like the sickness, but more like a gene therapy that's transitions from organism to organism, where you can get a dose of the love gene, and just by being in contact with another person and showing them goodness, they'll go be good to somebody else. And that's beautiful. So that's why I'm here. And I hope I could help some of you tonight. I really do. Let's go see what Odin has to say about his week, and then we'll sign off. Thank you so much for being here. I love you. Love yourself. Be well.
Hello, people. It's me and the Gingerbread Man.
Why do you sound so sad?
Because I'm not going to talk much.
Why not? This is your part.
Well, I don't have any idea.
What are you doing right now?
I'm basically watching TV.
What is it you like about TV?
I like the laughing noise.
You like the laugh track?
Yep, and yelling at the game.
You like people yelling at the game? Why is that?
I don't know.
Oh. Like, do you want to make your own YouTube someday?
Yeah.
Yeah? No, that's pretty cool. What kind of shows would you make?
I will make basically Minecraft videos, how you make stuff.
Really? And what would you want to teach people in those Minecraft videos? How to make stuff?
Uh-huh. Yeah. How to make a graveyard, how to make a creepy opening door.
Those are great ideas.
Upside down.
So you want to teach people?
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
How to make stuff.
You make good stuff. Well, I'm really grateful for you being here with me today. Thank you.
Welcome.
You want to say bye to everybody?
Bye.
Thank you, Odin.
Love you.
Love you more. See you next week. Bye.